Coming up on the Creativity in Motion podcast, we talk with YouTube content creator Brad Rodriguez.
A common misconception is I've already done this, I can't do it again. But I don't think that's true. I just think you need a little bit of a twist, a little bit of a spin. And if you hit a home run with something, you know, like, why would you not go back to it?
Right. Give it a shot.
Yep, sure. Hi, my name is Chris Hollow.
And I'm Mark Mosry. And this is episode number 21 of Creativity in Motion, a podcast about creativity where we talk with creatives of all kinds to find out why they create and especially how they use creativity to overcome obstacles.
In this episode, we're talking with YouTube content creator and woodworker, Brad Rodriguez. But before we jump into it, we should tell you about our sponsor, Nosy College of Art. Nosy College opened in 1973 as a fine art school and is transformed into Tennessee's only private art college. They offer bachelor degree programs in commercial illustration, graphic design, video and film, photography, and a brand new culinary arts associate's degree. They have a beautiful 55,000 square foot facility that was built with the artistic student in mind that includes computer labs, production suites, photography and video studios, and a fully stocked equipment cage. Everything students need to get creative. To learn more about Nosy College of Art, you can visit nosy.edu for degree program details, faculty information, and student work.
Chris, I'm going to introduce our guest here. 20 years after taking an intro to woodworking class, Brad Rodriguez's hobby has become a full-time career, leading him away from corporate America and into the upper echelons of YouTube content creation. His YouTube channel, called Fix This, Build That, has over 1 million subscribers, and he is well known online as a master DIYer and woodworker. Brad, thank you for coming by the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I found you online because I was contemplating building some cabinets for my garage workshop, and lo and behold, I come across your channel in an episode basically that said, build cabinets for your garage workshop.
Right. So if you're looking for garage cabinets, you're probably going to find me.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And it was. I mean, I bought the plans. I scoped it out. And then I was cruising by an old Hallmark card store in here in Nashville, and they were going out of business, and they were selling all their fixtures. I thought, I'll just go in there and see what they have. So I walked in. And there were my cabinets. And I thought, that's amazing. And so I just bought them right then and there. And so I never got around to making the cabinets, but I've been a loyal follower of your channel and your videos. And I really enjoy seeing what you come up with every video. And it's just been a lot of fun. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Which it's pretty awesome. I'm curious if you can sort of give us the 5-minute history of how you were able to get to this point in your career.
Sure. Yeah. And I'll try to make it the 2-minute version, which means the 10-minute version. But so I, like you said, you know, I started woodworking. It was like 2002, and I decided that I wanted to just start figuring out how to work with my hands a little bit more. And I grew up in scouts. So I enjoyed learning how to fix things. I always had that mindset, and I went to mechanical engineering school, Tennessee. And so my bachelor's degree is in mechanical engineering. And so it's kind of have that mechanical mindset. And I bought an old house up in Cincinnati, started to try to fix it up, and then figured out I started liking DIY, which led me into woodworking. And then it was just kind of a hobby. And then interestingly enough, my now wife, it was my girlfriend at the time, she worked at a high school, and they had a university class in the evenings that where they taught woodworking, which was cool. So I went and did that, and just got into it. And it was just a hobby for a long time. And then in 2013, we moved back down to Nashville. So I grew up here in Nashville, moved back down to Nashville. And I had been kind of just like messing around, you know, doing woodworking on the side. But here, all of a sudden, I left all my friends up in Cincinnati, all the people I did woodworking with, and coming back here, even though I grew up here, you know, most of my friends had left, or they were just, you know, doing different things, whatever. And they're different points of life. And so, I found this online community. I was like, hey, I want to share what I'm doing. And so I found Instagram, and this was 2013. I had no idea. I thought Instagram was like a picture taking app, like that you could just do edits like via SEO or something like that. And then I was like, oh no, this is like a social media thing. And so I started sharing my projects there, and lo and behold, people were interested. And I had people commenting and liking and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. And that just started growing. And I got, and I, you know, it's addictive, right? So you start getting some subscribers, followers, whatever it is. And so you want to do more. And so I keep sharing more and sharing more and get more people interested. And then, you know, maybe 6 months, a year down the road, this company reached out to me and was like, hey, can we send you a an air compressor to check out? And I was like, what? I was like, absolutely, send it. Here's my address. And I was like, that is like the coolest thing ever. And that was like the first moment where I was like, when they sent it, I was like, huh. Like the companies are interested. And I, at the time, it didn't really register, but definitely looking back at it, thinking like, oh, there's some commercial viability here. And so I just kind of kept growing that. And then, you know, fast forward that people were like, I want to see more. Like, can you show me more? You know, because I'm just showing pictures. It's back in Instagram. They didn't have video. And they wanted more. And so I started a blog, Fix This, Build That. And it was funny because 2013, I captured all that stuff. So I had the foresight to think like, we came up with Fix This, Build That. My wife, Susan, was the one that actually came up with the name. And so I got fixthisbuildthat.com, Instagram, Fix This, Build That, YouTube, Fix This, Build That. And I tried to like lock everything down. And so I started in and just started kind of going forward. And then I remember we were on vacation in 2015 down in Destin. And I got an email, and this company said they want to pay me $200 to do a blog post. And I was like, I have made it. This is it.
That's awesome.
I have made it. All right. And that was like the first paid gig I had. And then it was just like rapid fire. And then that, and I started the YouTube channel in earnest in 2016. And so from there, it's just grown and grown and grown and grown. But that was kind of the genesis of it. It was just spawned out of a hobby. And then I enjoyed what I was doing. You know, it's like you catch that bug of sharing with people, getting that positive feedback. And it's just that loop that you get into. And it's like, oh, this is fantastic. And then it just grows into everything else.
You mentioned turning your hobby into a career. That's something we've talked about a lot is, you know, most people start the thing that they're interested in doing as a hobby because they just like it.
Right.
And I'm no exception to that. I started photography just because I thought it was cool. And then at some point you turn it into a career. And then at some point you kind of think, well, now I'm doing it for a living. I don't do it for fun anymore. Are you running into that? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Do you build stuff for yourself anymore, or is it only for your channel?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that I struggle with as well, because when I first started out and, you know, I really enjoyed woodworking, and I really enjoyed working with my hands and seeing what I was able to make. And then there was this point in time when I decided like, hey, maybe, you know, I kind of hate corporate America and like, this is soul sucking and I want to get out of here. My first choice was maybe I should go into full-time woodworking and make commissions for people. And I did actually go down that road, but that was a huge thing. I was like, I don't want to do that because I don't want to be making, you know, cutting boards all the time and doing this. So I think that that's one way when I first looked at it, I thought if I was having to make the same thing over and over, tables, cabinets, you know, furniture pieces, whatever it is, I think that would have been way worse. But by going into content, I can always do something different. Mm. So it's not that repetitive, you know, manufacturing process like, oh gosh, here comes the holidays. I got to make 100 more cutting boards that I've already made 1,000 of the same one. And there's like no joy in it. So
right.
I never make the same thing twice anymore. And so that kind of helps me get around it. So I guess that's, you know, the thing when you think about it is that if you can still leave some of that creative capacity that you can tap into, that it doesn't just become this monotonous, oh gosh, I'm just punching the clock every day.
But then you also end up with, if you don't make it, you don't get paid. If you don't get paid, you don't get fed.
Right.
That's a whole different level of kind of responsibility and pressure.
Yeah, it is. Right. And so if you decide that you don't want to, you know, you're like, hey, I don't want to do the woodworking today or this week or this month. It's like, well, that's too bad.
Yeah, that's right. What if I don't want to do the woodworking?
Right, right. I mean, I guess that is the nice thing, though, again, about being a content creator is that, you know, if I want to, let's just say I was like, you know what, I'm just done with this. Like I could pivot my channel and, you know, you're going to lose people because some people come and they become because you're the guy, you're the cabinet guy. Right. And it's like, Mark is like, oh, I found this guy. And it's like, now if I started fixing up motorcycles, he might be like, yeah, you know, I'm not really a motorcycle guy. I'm that guy. But you know, in this whole generation of content creation and creators that you see so many people recreate and reinvent themselves that, and I know you guys are obviously in here in Nashville, the music scene, like you see, you know, music artists recreate themselves all the time. I think you can do the same thing in content creation, which, you know, that's part of the allure and why I really enjoy it. Cause I can, you know, go do different things and always change it if I want to. Cause at the heart now, I'm not a woodworker. I'm a content creator. And I could go on the back end. I could just stop doing things in front of the camera. And I have a whole back end of my business where I sell plans, like Mark was talking about. And so, you know, we could focus in on that. I could step away. So it's the business that we've built is very flexible in that sense that I think we can focus on what we want to, double down on what's working. And then when we get to a point where it's like, we need to change, we have a lot of options.
Well, in your case, you just said it, you're a content creator. You're not a woodworker.
Right.
Right. So converting woodworking from a hobby into a profession, you really didn't. You really converted woodworking into content creation.
Right. Yeah.
So that's true. So you building cabinets isn't such a chore because it's not, you didn't convert your hobby into that. You really converted your hobby into content creation.
Yeah. No, that is very true. Yeah. And it helps. It helps a lot to keep things fresh.
Mm. Yeah. That's a little bit of a double-edged sword though, too. It's like when you come from corporate America and things are so regimented and you have no say in rules and regulations or procedures, and you see so many things that could be improved upon. And when you sort of are free from those bonds and you're controlling your own thing, it must just feel like a flood of creativity and suddenly an endless lineup of options, and you can get to each and every one of them, right? And then, like 4 months later, you've gone through all of those and you're like, now what am I going to do? Because at the same time, you said, you don't want to keep making cutting boards over and over and again. I want to do different things. But now you've done something different and you're like, oh, that was good. You can't do that again. You got to do something different. And then you got to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is an endless parade of, no, I have to do something different. And at some point you're like, oh my God, I've got to do something different. What is that going to be? Right.
Right.
And I think a lot of people watch content creators or look at Chris and me who have turned our hobby into a career. We love our work. And, you know, and they think, well, those guys are just creative. They're just creative. They just an endless fountain of creativity and they can put that into their work. No one recognizes the difficulty in maintaining that and the fact that we are creative, but it's not a bottomless well of creativity. Like we have to mine that creativity.
Right.
And so at some point that became apparent to you.
Yeah. It's interesting because I don't consider myself creative at all. I do, but like, that's kind of my stock answer. Like I am not creative. I'm very linear, right? So I've got the engineering brain. And if you like, look at my designs, it's all straight lines. You know, I can tell you what, I've made every version of a box you can make, just about, but what I am good at, and I think it's part of the engineering mindset too, is breaking things down. And so, like I just said, you know, like I've made a ton of cabinets on the channel and even in the shop and just different videos. And you think, well, I've already made a cabinet. I can't make another one. And it's like, well, I don't know. Could I? And so I'll, you know, and people, because there's different viewers for each one, but I'll make one and I've made like a 3-drawer cabinet, a 4-drawer cabinet, a 5-drawer cabinet, a 7-drawer cabinet, a 9-drawer cabinet. Like there's, you know, there's all these different things. And it's like, okay, well, how do I you know, make this more interesting visually, or how do I make it more functional, which is what I really like to do. But then from the next part of it is like, okay, if it's the same thing, how can I present it differently? And so like this last video we did is another cabinet, and it was a cabinet in my office that was very similar to a cabinet I had just done. And so we really leaned into doing it in more of a music montage and leaned into a skit kind of in the middle of it, making a funny thing. And that it, so it was not as much how to as it was more entertainment, you know? And so kind of that line between entertainment and education, or the edutainment, whatever you want to call it, is that I think when you introduce that in, it's like you can rehash all those things that you've already done. So getting to, you know, to kind of answering the question, I think what I've recently found is that you can bring new life to old things just by twisting the take on it. Right. So going in, so it's like, oh, well, if we've already done a photo shoot with this guy or this gal, it's like, well, yeah, well, we did it outside. Well, what if we did it like on the lake or in the, you know, just like new setting. So it's like, oh, well, now you're interacting with new props and new lighting and all these different things that's all going to feel fresh to you, even though somebody say, well, you already took pictures of that guy. Right. So it's kind of that same thing, is that just like introducing a new way to think about it or new variables into the equation will help, you know, drive that creativity, I think.
And don't you think that's kind of the essence of creativity, is sort of looking at something and saying, I need to change this. Here's my problem. I can't do it the same way.
Yeah.
Here's the solution. Oh, I'm going to approach it from this point of view, or I'm going to do it this way. Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you think that you're not creative, because I would never have said that.
Also, I got a question. So how many plans do you have available for sale?
35 to 40, probably.
Where'd you get those from?
I made them.
Oh, you created them?
Oh. I created them, but you know, it's like I didn't invent the cabinet, right? So I guess that's what, because I'm very iterative. So I'm iterative and derivative. So I'm not good at taking a ball of Play-Doh and turning it into Michelangelo. Like, I'm much better at being like, oh, I was at this hotel and I saw this cabinet and it looked really cool. And I loved how they integrated the handle into the front and they had this design. And so what if I take that piece? Oh, and I was, you know, down at the bar the other day and I saw the feet on these things. And so it's like, I like taking pieces and parts of things that I see and then combining them into my own and then putting my own spin on it. So it's like, I'm creative in that sense of kind of the deconstruction and reconstruction of different ideas and derivatives versus, you know, coming up with brand new things like, oh, what if instead of a cabinet, it looked like, you know, a shark and the teeth were drawer, like, you know, like I would never go down that road ever.
Well, I can tell you that Mark and I would consider ourselves to be creative, but I would venture to say, I have never taken a photo that hasn't been done before.
Right. And I probably haven't taken a photo that I haven't already seen somewhere that someone else did that got into my conscious,
sure,
and then my subconscious, and then 10 years later influenced me to make a photo. And then 5 years after that, I pulled a book off my shelf and was flipping through it and saw my picture in this book that I knew I had seen 15 years ago and been like, man, I was all proud of that photo. And now I know where that idea came from, you know?
Well, and the handle that you saw and the foot of the thing that you saw may have been years apart.
Right.
Right.
It's
just, you stocked it away and you thought, I like that. I like that. I like that. And then you added them all together into your own thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of beauty in that. And, you know, in woodworking specifically, you know, a lot of people, as I say, there's two camps. People are like, oh my God, you ripped this person off. Right. And they like, if they see anything that looks the same, they just like hammer you. And then there's the other group that's basically like, there's nothing new under the sun. Like, after the first table was made, you know, right, 15,000 years ago or whatever, like from a rock, yeah, like, you know, there's nothing new and it's just different takes on it. And so I'm in that camp, and, I do a lot of, like I said, derivative, and what I always try to do, because especially being in the public eye so much, you don't want to get caught behind that of like taking somebody's design. And there's something like, it depends, right? So it's kind of an interesting line of like, how ubiquitous is this? Like, like if I make a table, I don't have to say, oh, I got this table design from, you know, Joe down the street, like whoever. Right. They're like, that's a table. Everybody's seen a table. Like, I don't have to say that I made this table. But then it's like, if you see something that's unique, and then you make something similar, but it's like a fairly new take on things. Then, you know, then, so it's all, I'm always like, oh, I got inspiration from, and I'll like show their channel or whatever, or wherever I got it from, to give credit where credit's due, because like we had this, you know, this whole thing where, and if you guys are familiar with river tables.
I was just going to say, who made the first river table?
Yeah. So, so Greg Claussen is like known as the river table guy. But he was not the first person to make river tables. He was the one that popularized them, and he made them with glass. And then all of a sudden, you know, it turned into epoxy and all that. But I remember when the first epoxy river table started becoming a thing, that those first ones out, oh, people were livid. They were like, you're ripping off Greg Claussen. Like, this is crazy. I can't believe it. And, you know, now it's just one of those ubiquitous things. You would never say, I got this from Greg Claussen. You would say, I opened Instagram and searched woodworking. And
I saw four today in my travels.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're everywhere, right? So that's a great example of how something that seems so, you know, is like so unique at the time. I mean, when that was like probably 3 years ago. And like in that time span, it's like it is one of the most, and you'll see it every bar in Nashville has probably got a, you know, some kind of epoxy river table,
right,
countertop or table or bar or whatever.
I'm drawn to the work of certain photographers. Certain photographers attracted me early in my career. I was captivated by their subject matter or by their technique or whatever. And that made a huge impact on me. And then 2 years later, here came another photographer that made a huge impact on me. And, you know, 2 years later, there's another one. So after a while, I've had these major impacts by certain photographers. Let's say, just for the sake of this example, let's just say there's been 14. Anybody that's been in photography for 30 years like I have has probably also been impacted by 14 photographers. But their 14 photographers and my 14 photographers are never the same.
Right.
Right. So my 14 photographers filtered through me is yielding my work. My work, which I can point to and say, this came from this photographer, this came from this photographer. But I'm the only person I know that's combining all of that into a separate thing that's me. Because nobody else is influenced by those same 14 photographers. Even though the raw materials came from 14 different sources, the way they're combined and turned into a new set of photos is unique, mm-hmm, and creative in that respect. So the input that you took from seeing the handle at the desk at the hotel and the way the drawer facing was and the leg or the overall structure and appearance of the table, nobody else is going to notice that because your filter is specific to you. That becomes the originality. And even though the raw material was sourced from many different people in many different places, the end result, the combination, was only seen and even envisioned by you and realized by you. So it's yours.
Right.
But I think to Chris's point, your plans, whatever your input sources were, they all filtered through a unique filter, a one-of-a-kind filter, and come out the other end looking like only like your plans can look.
Right. No, it is. And I know that, like, so I've had a lot of people tell me directly, and then I've also seen some, is that because I was one of the first, one of the first to kind of popularize the plans and you know, take it to kind of a different level, that a lot of people will make theirs after mine now. So a lot of these plans look like mine, which is funny on the back end. So I see it and I'll be like, oh, okay, I can tell. Like they'll use the same button on the front or they'll use whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, I know where you got that. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a good idea is a good idea.
Right.
And you know, there's a great book by a guy named Austin Kleon, and it's called Steal Like an Artist. It's a short book. You could probably read it in 30 minutes, mm-hmm, you know. I mean, I definitely fall into the camp of there's nothing new under the sun. Everything is borrowing and appropriating and iterations, yep, right? I'm iterations and derivatives also. I'm never more disappointed when I realize that something that I thought was mine is actually almost an exact copy of something that I saw years ago.
Right.
You know, so.
Or somebody launches that video and I'm like, I've got one in the hopper, like it's almost done editing. And then somebody puts up the video. It's like the exact thing. And I'm like, oh, I cannot believe you just did that. and then you have to like go re-edit yours to be like, I know that Bill just put this video out and Because it's like there's so much, there's so many people that are having the same ideas of in the online content world. You think you're great and smart until you see the exact same thing and you realize like, maybe we're all great and smart. But
well, we're working on a feature film right now that involves a Native American folklore.
Oh, cool.
And there's a movie that just came out that is exactly essentially our film. You know, it's like by like an A-list Hollywood director. It's gosh. Damn it.
Yeah. And an Academy Award winning, producer. I know you said that you don't consider yourself creative, but I wonder, when you realize that your stockpile of future video ideas is getting slim and you need to come up with some ideas to put in the queue, is there a process for making that happen?
Yeah, there definitely is. And it's interesting because as I've gotten deeper into it and have, your plate fills up, right? As a small business owner, you guys know, your plate fills up and then, you just start and you're doing the thing and it's great. And you've got all these ideas and then you're doing the thing plus, the taxes, and then you're doing the thing plus the emails, and then you're doing the thing.
All that.
Yeah, exactly. It all just adds up. And I feel like I've lost, honestly, a lot of my processes. Like I'm not as good at them anymore. Like I don't sit down and go fill up. Like I used to do that pretty frequently. Like go into I use Airtable, which is just like a kind of online database thing. And I just put in a bunch of ideas and then go in and I'd use that to, okay, what's up next? I'd go in and sort it and I'd label them, okay, this is a shop thing. This is a home improvement. This is a piece of furniture. And so to try to keep it fresh, okay, well, it looks like it's about time. We've been doing a lot of shop stuff. Let's do some furniture. And I'd pull up the furniture list. And so I had that list and I worked off that for a long time, but I just found myself not filling that out. And I feel like, I've let so much of the business cloud my mind and the more it creeps in, and I'm trying to get back into that because I'm not as good anymore as I used to be because I just have so much more knocking around in my noggin. And so, what I try to do is look at, my needs. So I'm a big need driven utilitarian, right? So it's like, okay, it's easy for what do we need at the house? Right? So that's always my go to. We bought our house in 2013 when we moved down here. And we've been slowly renovating it. And so I've done a lot of things, but that's always an easy one, right? So that's super easy. I always go around okay. It's always all right, our main bath, that's the piece de resistance waiting to be made, but it's also the biggest project I'm going to be going to do. So I'm always if I'm really a glutton for punishment, I'll do that. And then, so I try to work my way back. I'm okay, well, what if we've been talking about bookcases here. What if I made some of those? And so I'll kind of walk around the house, or I'll think about the house. I also try to do that. That's something I picked up from a guy I follow, Mark Rober. He talked about his creative process is and I really like this, what he said. And so I've started using this is picture yourself in a room in your house and picture all the struggles. I'm in the kitchen. My chairs are always banging into the wall. And our kitchen table is flimsy. And, we're too far away from, I can't see the TV when we're eating. It's what are all those little things? And then how could you address those? So instead of just being what's an idea? That's too big, right? It's too vague. Is really getting, confining yourself to a space and then thinking about the ideas within that space. And so that's really helped me. So instead of just brainstorming ideas, I'll say, what could I do in the kitchen? And then I'll come up with, silverware drawer. Yeah. Well, okay. What about storage for Tupperware? Yeah, that might be good. Under the sink that we could use some storage and just kind of piece and walk through instead of being so scatterbrained. That's really helped me a lot. And so that's something that I do a lot now, but it's a lot of it's utilitarian. And then, I go through the typical stuff, right? I go on YouTube, see what other people have done. Again, figuring out how to be iterative or derivative of that. Ooh, that was really cool. How could I incorporate that into something? I've gotten into, in the past couple of years, hidden features into projects. And so that's always something of, okay, it's always a twist. So it's anymore, you can't build a dining table and it's going to do well on YouTube because there's literally 1,000 videos on how to build a dining table on YouTube. So it's like, it's got to be like a dining table with a hidden trap, you know, or like a dining table that could kill you, or something like that. So I always think about that too, is like, I'll pair up the idea and then I'll have kind of the list of like the surprise, like, okay, a hidden feature or electronic incorporation or epoxy or like whatever. And so you take something that's now become just so kind of, you know, regular and basic, and then you pair it with something kind of exciting. So like I did a nightstand, but then I did a hidden drawer in it, you know, with a hidden button on the front of the nightstand to release the drawer. So it's, those are the things that I try to think about, is like, how can I pair up something that everybody's familiar with something that people are not familiar with?
Well, your table with the phone charger built in was one of those that set you off on your journey, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Cause that was, it was a desk, and wireless charging had, I think Apple had just released the wireless charging on whatever, iPhone 8 maybe or 9. And so that was hot. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, wireless charging, right? And so I was like, well, I want to build a desk, but what about a desk with wireless charging?
Yeah,
and right. So I hid it in there, and yeah, that one really took off, and that was one of the ones that propelled the channel.
Well, you know, just walking through your house and sort of addressing needs or problem solving for, you know, your trash can doesn't come out of the cabinet on a slider the way you want it to. At any one time, that same problem you're having, there may be 10 million people having that same thought. They just don't know how to execute it like you do.
Right.
So if you can be if you can solve your own problem, chances are other people are having the same problem too. And those are the people that are going to want to watch your video, and they'll search for how to make my trash can come out smoother.
Right.
And they'll find your video. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're 10 million view followers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that is the nice thing about the niche I'm in is that it people are searching for that. People want to know how to make things, how to solve the problems in their life. That's where a lot of people, you know, first time homeowners that are trying to build furniture. I mean, that there's always new first time homeowners, right? And so as those people come in, they're looking to save some money, build it themselves. And that's typically how the audience works. Our audience in the space is that it's typically somebody who is trying to save some money and do it themselves versus people who are just like, oh, I want to work with my hands. It's a lot of like, it's solving problems. It's like, I don't have money, but I got some time, so I'm going to try it out.
And then your cinder block and 2x4 shelving system that worked so well for you in college, you get married, doesn't work so well for you anymore.
Right.
You need to improve upon crates, that.
Yeah.
That's right.
You have one video where you put some LED lights, I think, in your bonus room. And I could see, as you were describing to me the process of walking around the house going, what are some upgrades that we need in here? I mean, you probably did that in more rooms in your house, but you can only film it once and get that mileage out of it from one room.
Right. Know? Well, you know, that's very interesting that you say that, because I do have other rooms I need to do the LED lights in. But I did a video on vinyl plank flooring. And this was like, I think it was 2018. And I work with Home Depot a lot, and they had reached out to me and they said, hey, we've got this new product coming out. And this was like when vinyl plank had just kind of hit the scene, the luxury vinyl plank, not the, you know, glue down stuff. We got this new product, you know, do you have anywhere you can put it? And like, I always, when Home Depot comes to you, you don't like, it's like one of those things. It's like, you don't turn them down. And so, you know, so I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want to do this, but I'll figure out a place. And so we had a laundry room that had just sheet vinyl. And I was like, okay. Perfect. And this stuff is cool. I mean, like it looks like real wood. I'm sure you guys have probably seen it, vinyl plank flooring. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I can do it here. And so I did it, put it in, and it, you know, small, just a little laundry room. And we put it in and put the video out. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to do that great. I tell you what, it just went crazy. And what was happening is like, Home Depot was like promoting all that, and everybody was starting to get into it. And it's like this new product that it's a lot cheaper than hardwood flooring. It's easy to install because it's like floating. And so the traffic was just immense on it. And I just kept, like, it was like, all of a sudden it's got 1 million views. And I'm like, all of a sudden it's got 2 million views. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And it just kept going. And so I thought, and I was like, well, and so one of the things about being a YouTuber is like, is doubling down. But I thought, I can't do another vinyl plank flooring. I already did it. And I was like, well, what if I do it, but put a different spin on it. And so I did another one where my niece, I was up in Cincinnati. They just bought a new house and they wanted to redo her bedroom. The carpet was all nasty. And I was like, well, why don't we do vinyl plank? They were talking about it. And I said, well, I'll do it when I'm up there. We'll do vinyl plank flooring. I'll install it. Me and my brother-in-law installed it. And so I did a video And it was like basically the exact same process, except the slant I put on it was 10 beginner mistakes to avoid when installing vinyl plank flooring.
I saw that one.
And so I did it, and sure enough, it blew up. And because it was getting views off of the first video. And so when, and so then I have these both, and like, then all of a sudden that one had a million views, and like, they're just crushing. And I'm like, well, how do I do more? And so then I did another one that was, like 6 ways to cut vinyl plank flooring. And so I've really focused in on the tools and the process of cutting it. And then I saw, you know, is another, and I'm thinking like, how do I make more vinyl plank flooring videos without making more vinyl plank flooring videos that I've already done? And so then I'd go in the comments. And so what I would see is like, I kept hearing like, will this work in a bathroom? Will this work in a bathroom? You think you could put that in a bathroom? Is this waterproof? And so I was like, well, I'll do it in a bathroom. And so I put vinyl plank flooring. It was a little bit different design too. It was more like a, looked like large format ceramic tile or porcelain tile. And so I put that in the bathroom. And then now, like, I don't think the cutting one, but I think the, all the rest are like the first one I did is the largest video on my channel by far. It's got 22 million views.
Oh my God.
It's absolutely insane. And so like, it's that thing. Like I think that's a common misconception is I've already done this. I can't do it again, but I don't think that's true. I just think you need a little bit of a twist, a little bit of a spin. And if you hit a home run with something, you know, like, why would you not go back to it? But how do you make it fresh so that you add a little bit more value? And what I found, I mean, especially in the YouTube world, is it's great because you just look at the comments. What were people asking that you didn't show? You know, well, oh, like how do you cut? Like, I don't understand. I don't have a circular saw. Can I cut this with a jigsaw? Or like, what else can you cut this with? Like, so those are kind of some of the questions I saw. And then like the mistakes thing was just kind of an easy way to flip it around. But yeah, I think that there's, you know, that people get in that mindset and that trap, but I don't think it's really true.
Well, clearly you didn't read my comment, which was, does it work on the ceiling?
Yeah.
I've been waiting and I have not seen that episode.
I've heard the walls. That was what I was thinking of, like, you know, for like a wall treatment, you know, like an accent wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you use vinyl planks on the ceiling?
Exactly.
Like, vinyl plank.
I would like to know.
Vinyl plank on the ceiling with the wireless charger
built in. Yeah, and LEDs.
Right. Yeah, and start LEDs. Combining your own videos.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, that's what it is. You just like you see.
That could be your April Fool's. That could be your April Fool's video.
Yeah.
That would be a good one. What that should be.
You can do one on how to rip out vinyl flooring.
How to remove. I wish I had never installed this vinyl plank floor. Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Shoot yourself in the foot right there.
Yeah, that's, I'm sure it would do great.
When you're just getting started with this and you're getting some encouragement from your Instagram followers and from all the people who should be encouraging you, right? Your family and your friends. Encouragement that you sort of kind of go, yeah, you're my family and friends. You should be encouraging me. You can have a tendency to kind of feel like an imposter, or in the back of your head, you're really wondering, is this any good? Like, am I just indulging myself here, and you don't really know. So Chris and I have talked about times in our past when we've sort of realized that what we were doing was actually good, and what a huge relief it was to kind of finally accept that, hey, maybe I do know what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment like that for you, or did you ever have a conversation with anyone or read something, or was there a moment where for you it clicked and you're like, you know, it's not just that I've figured out this platform. It's not just that I've figured out how to do what I do, but this is something that people really like. Their validation isn't fake.
Right.
They're not just propping me up here. Right.
Right. Well, I don't think there's any better validation than money. Right. So when somebody pays you, right, that, I mean, that's already, right? So in that, I mentioned that the first time, right? That first time that they said, hey, I'll give you $200 for this blog post. Like that was obviously, like that was, you know, kind of that watershed moment for me where I was like, oh yeah, okay. Like I'm legit. Like if people are going to pay me for this, like clearly it's valuable to them for them to spend their marketing budget, whatever on that. And so that was probably the biggest aha moment in that way. And then it's funny because then it's like all incremental, right? So then when that person came to pay me $300 or $500 or $1,000, it's all kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's great, right? And it's awesome. And it all kind of like gets bigger and bigger. And as you know, I'm sure your commissions and your rates go up, it just doesn't feel the same as that first one. I mean, unless you have like some really big contract come in or something, but I think that's part of it. And then the other thing that is more, was more, I think it was more like kind of, you know, grains of sand on the scales was the comments, the direct outreach from people I didn't know. So, you know, on Instagram, like, I don't know these people on Instagram, they're following me. And I would get, and I still do, you know, when you get that DM, that's like, oh man, I've been following you for years and I just love what you're doing. And you inspired me to start woodworking. And now I own my own business. And like, I'm, you know, doing woodworking full time, or just, hey, and I made my dining table and like my wife loves it. It's amazing. It, you know, I really enjoy woodworking and thank you for inspiring me. So I think those, like when you start getting those in the beginning, it's like, you still think like, ah, whatever. But then it's like the more that come in and they just, it's like that, it's like the validation in mass, right? And when you get so many of those, when you get the first few, I think it's easy to go like, ah, you know, whatever. You get the one from your mom.
You're welcome.
Yeah, your mom and your aunt. And then you're like, who is this guy? I don't know who this guy is. And you kind of write it off. I think that's the natural tendency of most people, is just to write it off. But then it is, I don't think it's not that like lightning bolt or watershed, but it's like over time, like, wow, this is really impacting people. And like, same thing, like every comment on a video that's saying, this was great, or this has been so helpful, or I made one, or, you know, they send me a picture. Like, those are always great when people send me pictures of what they've built. I used your plans to build this. And like, I can look at it and go, oh man, this is awesome.
There's an element of what you do that is like a teacher, you know, you're not checking in with people individually over the course of a period of time to chart their improvement, but what you are doing is you're putting content out there that people can refer to anytime they want and work at their own pace to achieve that. And you're receiving the feedback from these people. And yeah, I could see how that would just be like reason enough to keep doing it. Like, even if the money were sort of like planed out, you know, and you were just like getting all these heartfelt thanks.
Right.
You know? Like there's such a good reason to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but it is more positive than not, but of being, and I think about you guys and I think about, right. You don't have, I mean, I'm sure if you guys are sharing things on social media and whatever, you can get that same thing. But like, if you're delivering a portfolio to a client, like you just get that direct feedback, right. Of like, whatever, you know, they pay you and I'm sure they say, oh, I love it. It's great. But that's kind of, it's done. Right. And then you move on to the next one versus, you know, the beauty of what I do as a content creator is I put that out there. And I mean, I get comments like, you know, like today I'm getting comments on a video that I made 5 years ago. So it's like, you get this trickle. And of course, like some of them are like, you're an idiot. that'd be nice if I had $10,000 workshop. You know, I'm like,
thanks, YouTube.
Sorry. Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, that's the other part, right? When you hand that portfolio to your client, there's not some dude like that walks in the side of the door and goes like, that sucks. Like, he's like, wait, hold on. What, who are you? Yeah. Like, I don't even know who you are. So like the whole troll thing, you know, I mean, that's a whole nother topic, but you know, basically when you're a content creator, you have to have thick skin and you have to get over those comments because like people just, you know, there are people out there. And yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I feel for them because there's people out there that like their life is so bad. The only way that they feel better about themselves is going in and like telling you how much you suck. And
trying just, to knock
like,
you down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like that makes them feel good. And you know, that's kind of like the world that we live in online social media and people think they can say and do anything online because they're behind a keyboard and, you know, it's anonymous. But I think that the flip side of that is that most people are positive. And the other side is that like, when I get these troll comments and people like tearing me down, like, oh, that was a copy. Like this sucks. You're horrible. It's easy to take that to heart. And it's easy in the beginning too. And then eventually you're just like, whatever. But, it's more so when like, you know, none of those comments really hit you except for when they, you know, where, if it's like something personal, like if you, well, let's say like I made a design and I was like, in my head, I thought, oh, this was too close of a copy of, you know, that one thing I saw. And then somebody points that out and I'll be like, oh gosh, that guy.
Busted.
I was like, he knows, man, he knows. Yeah. Right. So there's very few things, but there's a few like comments or projects where if they say something, I'm just like, I'm horrible. And I just like delete, move on. That's the greatest thing about comments is like, you know, I can just delete them. So
we had a podcast guest on that's a romance writer, and she talked about being a pantser versus a planner. Mm-hmm. Right. So I would say you're a planner.
In writing parlance, a pantser is someone who's writing their story and figuring it out as they go. Yeah, that sounds good. Oh, we'll have them do this. And a plotter or a planner is the person who outlines it, says, we're going to develop these characters. They're going to go like this. And they get that. And then they sit down and write it.
They know exactly where they're going with it.
Yeah. I am absolutely a planner.
That's your left brain, mechanical engineering. Yeah. I would say you're the same, right, Mark?
It depends. I mean, it does. It depends because if you've ever been, quote unquote, in the zone with something. I mean, and a lot of athletes report having been in the zone doing something. I'm sure there are times in your shop, Brad, where you are in the zone and your ideas are evolving as you're creating it. Oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. This would be much better if I do it that way.
Wait a minute,
if I'm going to do that, right? If I do that, I'll make it out of this wood, because that'll look better, right? And then in the span of 30 seconds, you've evolve that five iterations because you're thinking, you're concentrating, right? And a lot of people also refer to that as flow. And so I do like to plan. I like to sort of have an idea what it is I want to do. But having stumbled into the zone a couple of times and actually experienced flow a couple of times, I'm trying to make more room for that. I'm trying to allow for that, those experiences where you can be very focused and in tune with that and be getting sort of that direct feedback at the same time, listening to your inner voice that's telling you this would be better. This would be better. Keep doing that. Right. For me, that trick, and maybe you guys have a different way of doing that. Be interesting to hear. But for me, the trick is to eliminate distractions, put some music on that's not going to be invasive, which usually means an instrumental or something that's not going to conjure a memory from high school, right? And allow myself to fully address what it is I'm working on, right? I mean, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think it's hard for me because I'm always like the time crunch, right? And so I think that's a really important point and something that I don't give enough time to is just making time and space for creativity versus doing the plotting and the planning, right? So that's how I'll sit in front of the computer. So when I'm typically creating, I create in 3D, you know, CAD drawings. And so I'll be like, okay, and you know, I always start with a box. I start with like, okay, here's the bounds of what I want to make. And I kind of fill everything in inside it. And so when I do that, I think that like I'll be doing it and I always have, as I'm working, it's like this clock in my head. I'm like, oh, I'm spending too much time on this. This is, you know, it's too long. And so that's something for me, instead of just like sitting back, I'm trying to like get from point A to point B the fastest versus like, I don't know, maybe point C might be better. You know, maybe I should take this circuitous route over here and explore this. So I don't do a lot of that as much as I should, typically just because I always think like, I need to be, you know, I mean, it's computer work. Like I need to be moving this thing along. I need to be getting to the next stage and starting the build versus designing the build. So that's, I don't know, like how does that work for you?
I'm definitely a pantser. Like I'm a measure once, cut twice kind of guy.
Yeah.
but I'm willing to risk it. I mean, I'm willing to risk making the wrong decision and having to back up a little bit, because to me, that's, I mean, if I built this building we're in and I didn't have really plans for it, I just built it. I build stuff all the time that I don't measure. I mean, I'll measure, but I'm in my head, I'm thinking, it's half inch thick. I need to leave an inch for each side, half inch. And, you know, I'll wing it. I just enjoy winging it. And I think that it's rewarding when you get to the end of it and you've winged it. Right.
Wong.
You've wung it.
Wang. I think it's wang.
Wanged it. Yeah. But I enjoy that process. And I think that to me is more creative than following the recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something
I like that.
I would love to be better at that because I have people all the time ask me about like, oh, would you ever want to be on like one of those competition shows or like be, you know, or they'll say like, you should do a live build. And I'm like, no. Never in my life would I do that because if you see me in my shop, there's probably a 50-50 chance that you'd walk in or if, you know, there's a video camera in my shop that I would just be standing in one spot staring at something because I'm just very cerebral, right? So instead of like that constant motion, I'm looking and I'm like, okay, what should I do? And so it's not, instead of like failing forward or like action, I tend to subvert back to inaction physically and going to the mental and then like working through, but at the same time, you know, you can really easily get into that, you know, analysis paralysis and not make the forward progress. And so that's something that I'm always thinking about. Oh, well, I could leave a half inch on each side, but what if I don't use these same drawer slides? What if I use the other drawer slides? Cause I haven't decided that yet. And so then like you know, you go down instead of just like, I'm just going to make it happen. And so like, if I was on one of these shows, I would just fail miserably because I am not good on the fly. I'd just be thinking like, oh, well, what's the next step? You know? And they're like, the guys would be done. And I'd be like, okay, I'm ready. Let's go.
I'm going to bring a bunch of wood to your house and we're just going to build something. It'd be fun. we'll just like, what do you think? I don't know. Let's make a hutch. All right. Let's do that.
Yeah. Just start banging some stuff together.
It would be great.
Yeah. I've done it a few times, but you know, I'm the guy who like, I lay out the whole cut list, right? So I don't just like go to Home Depot and be like, probably 10 boards should do it. You know, I'm like, I've got every part marked out. Right. I've got them all measured and labeled. And like, I know within 2 inches, you know, that like, okay, here's going to be all my waste material. And, but that's also one of the hallmarks of what I do and of my plans. And one of the ways that I stand out above the rest is that my plans are extremely efficient. And so I try to make it so that you can use this one sheet of plywood and make that. Right. And so like, I'm always about efficiency and my whole, you know, one of my selling points is like, listen, you know, this plan's like $9-$10. I'm going to save you $60 in that extra sheet of plywood that you're not going to buy. Right. So you're absolutely actually saving money buying these plans versus, you know, going out and winging it. And so that's, but at the same time, I mean, so there's a time and a place for that, but at the same time, being able to, hit a bump in the road and quickly move past that, you know, that's something I think having that creative kind of pantser mind is much better suited to keep making forward progress. And yeah, you might have to back up and redo some things, but that, you know, it's action I think is definitely better than inaction, but I just take most of the action in my brain.
Well, these days, if you miscut a piece of plywood, you're eating into your child's college education.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
As expensive as that stuff
is. Wood prices are insane right now.
It is.
One of the things I like on your videos is you'll say, you'll get to a step and then there'll be a hard cut and you'll come back and you'll say, actually what I did is I actually drilled those holes in the wrong place. So when I realized that, I realized I had to go back and redo that. So we're back now and the holes are in the right place. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's awesome. You know, first of all, you admit you sort of showed your fallibility and, you know, you're only human here to make mistakes, because I think people would find that reassuring, that to know that you stub your toe and have missteps along the way also. And I think a lot of people who think that people who are creative just magically produce the things that they produce without making those mistakes are doing themselves a disservice and in some ways talking themselves out of attempting to be creative by thinking that the mistakes that they're bound to make should not be part of the creative process. But those steps are not only part of the creative process, but they are integral to the creative process because you can't arrive at that destination without making mistakes. And people need to realize that, that even the people who do it professionally, YouTube content creators, full-time photographers, full-time filmmakers, painters, musicians, I mean, athletes. I mean, Ted Williams hit 400, right? He batted 400. In baseball, if you succeed at 40% of the time at hitting, that gets you in the Hall of Fame, right? How much time do you think he spent in the batting cage practicing, fouling off balls, missing balls, right? We all do it. We all fall down. We all stub our toes. And it's just a huge part. It's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
You know?
That is like, so one of the, you know, one of the themes on the channel is mistakes were made. And so we've really leaned into it. And so like, we have like shirts that say like mistakes were made and stuff. And so, yeah, it was probably like 2 or 3 years ago. I was like, I'm just going to put like, I made some boneheaded mistake. And I was like, I'm just going to leave that in there. And when I left it in, like the feedback was so positive, like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for leaving that in there. Now, you know, a lot more people are doing that now. But back then it was like, you know, it was like so clean and it was like, you know, just like an HD TV show, right? You're trying to make it just so professional and clean. And I had those same thoughts, right? It's like, well, you know, like all these people, like you have to give them permission to mess up. Cause you know, they are. Cause like, if you're messing up, like, and that's like, I mean, I was like, I'm going to start including this. And then I'm like, all right, there's no way I can include all the mistakes. So I got to let me pick the ones. Cause like, even like now, like every single project I make, I screw it up somehow. You know, sometimes it's small and sometimes it's big, and we'll leave the ones in where, and especially if it's like funny, because that makes for good content too. Right. So we'll leave it in there. And I started doing that. And I started realizing like, oh my gosh, like if I just like get my reaction to be like, I'll like cut something too short and I look at it and I'll be like, ah, you know, right. and people love seeing you in misery. So they love that.
Yeah.
But they also love knowing like, oh yeah, you are a professional and you are making the same mistakes that I make. Oh, I thought I was alone. You know? And so whenever I share something like that, I always get like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Like, it's great to know. That's what one of the biggest comments. It's great to know that people, even people like you, still make mistakes. I'm like, listen here. I'm professional because I get paid money. I am not a professional woodworker. I'm a professional content creator who does woodworking content. Like, yeah, I'm not like, you know, the Michael Jordan of woodworking by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, if it was super stale and clinical, then it wouldn't be interesting.
Right.
And then the expectation would be that they can do that too. If you can't do it, they sure as hell can't do it either.
Right.
So it's like, it's an unrealistic expectation that they can do what you do. And if you show your fallibility, then you're one of them.
Yeah.
And it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you show your failures in the case of what you're doing, or in the case of what Chris and I do, if we're working on a job for a client or whatever, you're not showing the failure. What you're showing is the success despite the failure. Ultimately, the end of your video, you have a happy ending,
right?
Right? Because you have a completed project. And if people see the failure along the way, that it's superseded, even eclipsed by the ultimate success. Because
right.
You just are like, yeah, you saw me fail 3 times on this and here we are at the end and it looks perfect. Not
right.
Perfect, but it's exactly the way I wanted it, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're showing. You're showing the success. Who cares about the failures?
Yeah, despite it. And it just... You know, it's part of life, obviously, right? And there's so much of that connection in between, and also it's, you know, part of like the hero's journey and the story. It's like they, you know, if you just went through and were like perfect, like you said, it would just be clinical and yeah. Stale. It's like they want to see the struggle. They want to see like, oh, how is he going to fix this? And so that's something else that we've been, you know, and when I want to go back and like look at my videos from like 2016, you know, it's like, I'm sure when you look at your first photographs, you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And so like, you know, you go back and you look at your old stuff and that's what I always tell people as well. It's like when new content creators are coming and asking me questions, they're like, how do I get like you? Like, how do I get there? And I'm like, listen, you're doing the wrong thing. You're comparing yourself on day one to me on day 2000, you know, right? So you need to compare yourself on day one to me on day one. And so I always tell people, go to your favorite YouTube channel, whatever it is, you know, if you want to be a content creator, go to your favorite channels, go look at their videos and there you can do it and you can sort. It's usually sorted newest to oldest. You can sort oldest to newest.
Right.
Go out there Like, go to like the channels that you think just are like, oh, these guys, like, they are amazing. Even, you know, like Peter McKinnon, right? You know, he's amazing cinematography. Like, you know, you go back, sort his from oldest to newest, and you look at it and you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. He, you know, his stuff was not that great either. And so
I'm already ahead of him.
Exactly. And so I think there's a lot of that, you know, comparing and wanting to be how people are now, but you're not putting the time, you're not putting the work yet, and you're not going to be where you want to be until you've had those failures, until you've had those experiences, until you've had those wins, until you've had those losses, and you grow and you grow and you get better as you go. And then eventually, you know, then go compare yourself, right? And then maybe you do grow faster, maybe grow slower, right? And so there's all people, like, you know, I'm sure there's absolutely people out there that in a year could be better than me. Sure. I mean, 100%. And then there's people that could try their whole life and not be able to produce the same. So, you know, everybody's different, but I think that if you go in knowing that the beginning is tough and that you know, the journey starts with the steps and it starts with the learning, and you have to build it up. You can't go out and just think that it's going to be perfect whenever you start. So that's part of what we try to do, is like, even though I am down far the road, we're still nowhere near perfect. So let's just kind of lean into it together.
That is an excellent place to wrap up this podcast.
Awesome.
Man, it has been great having you on. A pleasure to meet you. And one of the things that we like to do before we let you go is we like to ask our guests, and we will participate as well, something you're looking forward to. Is there something that you're looking forward to you can share with us today?
Yeah, well, one thing I'm looking forward to is just kind of getting out of this season of social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. And I feel like in the past, you know, 2 years now, it's like so much has changed. Life has changed, and just the way we interact. And especially when I'm already somebody who works from home and works like, you know, basically by myself in my shop, those opportunities that I got to kind of hang out with people, like a lot of that's like, oh, like we used to have meetups for the woodworkers every quarter or whatever. And now we've not been doing that for a while. And so it's just like, I'm just so ready to get back to that more communal, and we're already, you know, we're getting there and everything, but yeah, I feel like, you know, there's a healing time coming where everybody's going to just be like out, you know, like, oh gosh, I'm so glad to be done with this. And like, you know, yeah, you might get a cold every now and then, but that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Mark, what about you?
Well, what I'm looking forward to, of course, is we're about to start up again on our movie, and that's just one part of a period of time that's coming up here where we have some podcast episodes scheduled. We have some pitches on our calendar for new commercial clients. We have our movie we're starting up again. It really feels like that winter, in this period of sort of dormancy, like the end is in sight, right? With our business growing and the film starting up again, it feels appropriate that this episode with Brad has come at a time when I feel like we're coming out of dormancy, because I feel like this was a great conversation. So what I'm looking forward to is probably the next 4 or 5 weeks when we get fully into like creative work mode. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be in search of that zone to try and get the most out of that.
Cool. Well, I took all the upholstery out of my boat and took it to an upholstery shop, and I'm going to get it back next week. And I'm pretty excited about getting my upholstery back. I can put it back in the boat. That's pretty simple.
Brad, I can't even believe I'm going to ask you this, because if our listeners haven't figured this out yet, then they haven't been listening.
Yeah.
But where can we find you online?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you search Fix This Build That, everything will come up, but fixthisbuildthat.com is kind of the hub. But we're basically everywhere. So you just search for it, we'll show up.
That's awesome. We definitely want to thank Brad Rodriguez for coming on the show today. We want to thank our sponsor, Nosy College of Art. Creativity in Motion is produced by the hardworking team at Penumbra Entertainment. If you like this show, please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you really liked it, The best way you can support us is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And now on Spotify, you can also rate the show right from the show's page in the Spotify app.
Follow Penumbra Entertainment on Facebook and Instagram. On both platforms, we are Penumbra Films. To get show notes and occasional bonus content for this or any other episode, please make your way to our website at penumbra-ent.com.
If you have any questions, please send them to us at creativity@penumbra-ent.com. We'd love to hear your ideas and thoughts about the show. If you have suggestions for topics or guests you'd like to hear on the show, please let us know. We hope you'll join us on the next episode of the Creativity in Motion podcast. In the meantime, don't forget that putting your own spin on an existing idea is just another way of being creative.